After wishing everyone a Shavuot Tov. So we're here on Lamed Beis, Omer Aleph. And we're learning the Braisa that lists all the psulim of Lulav. And if you recall, we had a discussion about a Lulav that was kafuf, that was bent on top or bent on the side, which is called akum, kemagol. Means that the shidra itself, the spine of the lulav, is completely curved. And we said that that's possible. That was one of the discussions that we had. And in the context of that discussion of akum, domel magol, we differentiated between lefanov and liachorov. And we said that if it's liachorov, then it's kosher. But if it's lefanov, it's possible. The Gemara goes back and forth about it. Let's study. What if it's curved on this side or at that side? And that leads us to our sugya for today, which is called Nifritzu Olav. So let's see if we count on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph down from the top, approximately 10 lines. You'll see a line that starts with the word Hu, and in the middle of that line it says Nifritzu Olav. So I want to make sure we're all on the same page. Yeah? Omar Rav Papa. Now, the Mishnah itself, let's just review, differentiates between... Brian, we have a seat for you here. Differentiates between two cases. One case is called Nifritzu, and the other case is called Nifridu. Okay, then in the case of Nifritzu, the lulav is possible. In the case of Nifridu, the lulav is kosher. So what's the mishi Nifritzu and Nifridu?
Broken.
Yeah, Nifritzu means that the leaves of the lulav are completely broken off. They're detached from the lulav. And Nifridu means that they're separated from the spine, but they're still hanging in there. They're not yet detached. In the first case, the Mishnah paskins that the lulav is posel. And the chiddush here is that you can't just take the parts of the lulav, which are now detached, and just bind them together and combine them into one. That you can't do. So that's Nifritzu. Then we have the case of Nifridu, where it's still attached. Are you with me? It's still attached. Now, in the case of Nifridu, where the Mishnah says that the lulav is kosher, we're going to have a discussion about is there a requirement to bind them together? They're still attached to the lulav, but it's not what's called kafus. Again, if I'd ever find this black marker, I would write it on the board, but you all know what kafus is. The Torah calls the lulav kapos tmarin. And if you change the vocalization, the vowels, then it becomes kafus. Kafus means it's bound together. So we're going to have a discussion later on about Nifridu Olav, where the Mishnah says that the lulav is kosher. Does it require kafus? Does it require that you bind them together? I'm just giving you a little bit of a preview of what's coming around the bend. Okay. Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa says the following. Nifritzu di Ovid ki chufya. What he wants to suggest here, first we'll translate it literally, that the case of Nifritzu, which the Mishnah disqualifies the lulav, the Ovid, he made the lulav like a chufya. Chufya is what we call a broom. A broom is made up of individual spikes, if you will, and then they're tied together. So what he did here is, he took the olim of the lulav and he tied them together. They've been detached from the shidra, from the spine, and now he ties them and binds them together, and that's called Nifritzu. So the Chiddush of Rav Papa here is that even though he went ahead and he bound the olim that were detached from the lulav together, and now they're all attached to the shidra, he did that artificially, that's not enough. nifridu. However, if they're separated, says Rav Papa, the ifrud ifrude, in other words, the olive, these leaves are separated from the shidra, and they're not, how should I say, davuk, they're not, you know, they're not hugging the shidra, they're separated from the shidra, but they were not detached from the shidra. Okay. Now, once again, what we haven't touched on yet, that's going to be coming around the bend, as I said before, is do you have to, in such a case of nifridu, where the leaves of the lulav have separated from the shidra, but they're not totally detached, do you have to attach them by binding them together? That's going to be the next issue. But first, we have a sugya called the tiomes. Now, we've discussed in the past that the lulav is made up of three parts. Let's just review. There's what you call the shidra. The shidra is otherwise known as the gufo shel lulav, the essence of the lulav. And then coming out of the shidra, you have the olim, you have the leaves. And then there's something called the tiomes. The tiomes, which is the Siamese twins, as we call them, is one leaf that goes all the way up from the shidra to the top. It really sticks out on top. And if you would examine it carefully, you would see that it's a fold of really two leaves that are attached together with a fold. Boy, Rav Papa wants to know, what happens if I cut that fold? And in essence, I split the tiomes. It's like if you had Siamese twins and you did a surgery, and through that surgical operation, you separated the two twins. What would be the status of this lulav? Meaning, how critical is it to have the tiomes intact in its original form? The other parts of the lulav, you know, you can say, okay, I'm missing a little bit, it's not perfect, you know, the olim are not totally matched up and connected to the shidra, they're a little bit separated. You know, I can look the other way and I could overlook that. But in the case of the tiomes, now you're hitting the danger zone. Now, this is the critical part of the lulav. You can't mess around. So if Papa wants to suggest that since this tiomes is basically two leaves that are attached to each other, if you separate those two leaves, so now you have a double tiomes, you know, I would be excited about that. Right now I have two instead of one. I got two for the price of one. But the answer is no. Rav Papa thinks that's almost as if you remove the tiomes surgically, because the tiomes has to have that initial natural state in which the two halves of this leaf are connected. That's what he's vacillating back and forth. Now, Rabosai, in order to really appreciate what Rav Papa is talking about, and before we see Rashi, we have to ask ourselves the following question. We had a sugya earlier called saduk. So let's just again review the case of saduk. Saduk means it's split. And we had two cases of saduk. One case where Rav Huna says it's kosher, and another case where the Braisa that enumerates all the disqualified lulavs has saduk on the list. And there too, Rav Papa comes to the rescue, and he says the following. That the case of Rav Huna is a case where there's a sedek, there's a split in the olim, in the leaves. Let's talk about the top leaves, on the top part of the lulav. But you still have one shidra. You have one spine that comes up, and the olim on the top are split. Again, how many olim are split, we don't know. That says Rav Huna's kosher. Then we have something in the Braisa that's saduk, that's possible. And that's called kehemnik. You remember, I warned you that I might test you in the middle of the night about what hemnik is. Hemnik means that the top of the lulav splits, just like that. Now, in the case of kehemnik, Rashi says that the lulav is possible because it has shtei shidraos. In other words, the hemnik is indicative of the fact that this is a double-spined lulav. You know, until now we've been talking about the tiomes, which is always there on the top of the lulav, that's called a twin because it has two parts, two halves of the leaf that are connected to each other. But now we're going down to the spine, and we're saying, what we're saying is, in the case of Kehemnik, Rashi says that if you look at the spine from the bottom of the lulav going up, you'll see at one point the spine splits. And Rashi says that that's kind of a genetic problem from the nature of this lulav, that it looks like it has two shidros. And perhaps we have to take that Rashi and associate it with Rav Papa. After all, if Kehemnik means that the top of the lulav is split, and clearly the Brisa says such a lulav is possible, what is Rav Papa vacillating about? Rav Papa has a suffix, he doesn't know if Nechlaka Atiyomis is kosher or possible. Well, that should be the case of Sadu Kehemnik. Because what was Sadu Kehemnik, which is clearly possible, where the top of the lulav is split? No, if the top of the lulav is split, then that's exactly Rav Chisda's case. But now we go back to Rashi on Kehemnik, and Rashi says, what's the problem of Kehemnik? Two shidros. So now we have a difference between Rav Papa, which is sort of low-key, it's less of a profound anomaly or disqualification, you know, disfigurement, if you will, of the lulav, than the case of Kehemnik. Kehemnik is a very profound and radical disfiguration, and the lulav looks like it has two spines, and the Torah says take one lulav and not two lulav, and then to the extent that we identify the lulav as the shidra, one lulav as opposed to two lulav, it means that if you have kehemnik, which is steak shidros, that's out. However, our Gemara of Rav Papa today, of Boy Rav Papa Nechlaka Tiyomus Mahu, here we're not talking about shtei shidros. We're talking about a situation in which there's a serious split in the top leaf, which is called the twin leaf, the Tiyomus, and the two parts of that split of that leaf have been separated one from the other. Mahu, what's the din in such a case? So let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, Nechlaka Tiyomes. Again, if you could find the Rashi, you get a Yashikoch just for that, because it's about, I would say, somewhere between 15 and 20 lines down from the top. And Rashi says, Shnei Olim Elyonim Emtsayim. He speaks about two leaves. Again, you'll soon see that the two leaves are connected to each other. And that's why it's called a Tiyomes. And these are the top leaves in the middle of the lulav, Sheshama Shidra Kola. That's where the Shidra, the spine of the lulav, terminates. So at the point at which the Shidra ends and there's one leaf that shoots out from the middle of the spine, that middle leaf is called the Tiyomes. Rashi identifies as two leaves because, again, they're attached. And now you split them. Nechleku Zemize. So the two leaves which are connected, are attached, are now split. Then Rashi adds Vinistika Hashidra, and Rashi is now contrasting this case with the case of Kehemnik. Kehemnik, we said, was Shtei Shidra. So Rashi's saying here there's a Sedek in the Shidra, but it's clearly one single Shidra. There's a split in the Shidra, and as a result of that split, going all the way up the Tiyomus, that top leaf was disconnected one half from the other. But it's not a case of Shtei Shidros. If it was a case of Shtei Shidros, then the Brice, as we said earlier, clearly says that's Kehemnik, and that's possible. But Rav Nachman wants to say that Nechlukat Yomas might be kosher. How could it possibly be kosher? Isn't it like the split of Kehemnik? And the answer is no. This is not as radical as the split of Kehemnik, because we don't have Kishtei Shidros. But why does Rashi insist that Nechlaka Tiyomus means Nistika Hashidra? Underline those two words in Rashi if you have your own Gemara. Nistika Hashidra means that the split is not just on the top, because again, as we said before, the Tiyomus shoots out from the Shidra, but Rashi says that the split from the top goes all the way down to the Shidra. Why did Rashi have to add that?
Is it just to clarify for us?
to exclude Rav Huna. Again, keep in mind, we have two cases of nistak, of splitting. We have Rav Huna's case, which Rav Huna says is kosher, and then we have the Bryce's case, which is possible. The Price is talking about a case of Nira Kehemnik. It looks like it's got two shidros, Rashi says. Our case of Nechlaka Tiomis is not Nira Kishtek Shidros. Now we have Rav Huna. Rav Huna says that if the top of the olim of the lulav are split, the lulav is still kosher. So now Rashi has to ask himself the following question. Well, if Rav Huna's nistak, where it's not Kishtei Shidros, is kosher, then why does Rav Papa have a tzad? He's inclined to raise the possibility that maybe Nechlaka Atiyomis would be possible. Why should Nechlaka Atiyomis be possible if Rav Huna says that nistak is kosher? And presumably Rav Huna's nistak is on the top olim, including the Tiyomis. So it would seem offhand that Rav Huna is even a more radical or profound change in the Tzuras HaLulav, in the shape of the Lulav, than the case of Nechlaka Tiyomis. In Nechlaka Tiyomis, you only attack one leaf, albeit the middle leaf, the top leaf, but it's only one. And Rav Huna says, Nistak means ha'olim ha'elyonim, in the plural. So there's a whole bunch of olim that are split on the top of the Lulav. No, if that be the case, then certainly the Tiyomis is split, and yet Rav Huna says paradoxically that lulav nistak is kosher. So that's why Rashi adds here two words, that Rav Papa's reality is more harsh and more profound than that of Rav Huna, because nistaka shidra. It wasn't just that the split was in the top part of the lulav. The split went from the tiyomis all the way down to the shidra, and part of the shidra, the top part of the shidra, was split. Now, I'm not sure, according to Rashi, you know, when Rav Papa says this might be possible, is it possible because A, there was a split in the tiyomis, or B, because it was a split in the shidra? In other words, maybe Rashi's saying that if you do a real split, you know, if you do a radical kind of split in that top ola, which is called the tiyomis, it eventually could cause the shidra itself on its top part to split. I don't know. But in any event, Rashi has A plus B. There are two descriptions or two conditions that set up Rav Papa's suffix of Nechlaka tiyomis. Number one, it is a leaf that's attached to each other in its natural state and you split it. But number two, that split goes all the way down to the shidra and the shidra is partially split. Keep in mind, it's not as extreme as nistak in the Brisa, because that's kehemnik, which looks like two shidros. This is not a case, Nechlaka Tiyomis of Rav Papa, of nirikishtei shidros. This is one shidro. On the other hand, it's not as light, you know, lightweight of a psul as the case of nistak in Rav Papa, which is kosher at the end, because there the tiyomis was on the shidra was unaffected by the split. Says Rashi, here we have it right in the middle. Rav Papa's situation is midway between Rav Huna and the Braisa. Rav Huna says nistak is kosher because there was no split in the shidra. And the Braisa says that nistak is possible kehemnik. Why? Because there it looks like two shidros. So Rashi says that our case of Rav Papa of Nechlaka Tiyomis is right in the middle. It doesn't have what? It doesn't have the radical change in the very, you know, natural form of the lulav and look like two shidros. That far we don't have. On the other hand, it's not as light as the psul of nistak according to Rav Huna, because here the split reaches all the way down to the shidra, it includes the shidra.
You kept saying, as far as the prices are concerned, it looks like two shidros. What does that mean? It looks like. If there is it, either there are two or there aren't two. I mean, what does hem and neck mean? Does it mean there are two, or it looks like two? Because if it just looks like two, if there is only one, then there's only one.
Well, again, I don't think there are two shidros from the bottom of the lulav and all the way up,
right?
You know, because that I wouldn't need hemnik for that. Hemnik means that if I take a look at the split on top, I begin to see that the two halves of the split, one on the right and one on the left, emanate or extend from the shidra, and the shidra itself splits. So it's not shtei shidros mamish. You know, that would probably be possible even if it wasn't kehemnik. If somehow you could imagine, I don't know if in nature there could be such a freaky case where you had two shidros from the bottom of the lulav, but at some point they attached to each other, and there was one leaf that shot out from both shidros, and then you would ask me, is it kehemnik or not, if it split all the way on top, and I would say no. But what happens with kehemnik is that even though most of the shidra is solid, you know, it's one shidra, one spine, but at some point in the development, in the, you know, if you follow the route, to follow the, shall I say, the road of the shidra all the way to the top, you'll see that at some point the shidra splits, right, and it becomes kehemnik.
So the shidra splits into two shidrot.
Correct.
Okay, so it does.
But again, it's not two shidros in the most radical sense. You could have, again, I don't know, I don't have a picture for you, of a lulav that's a combination of really two lulav, where you have two shidros from the bottom of the lulav all the way up. That would be possible from the get-go. That's shtei shidros. Here we have a case of kehemnik, where if your eye will follow a little bit lower than the kehemnik, why does it look like this? You'll see that at some point the shidra splits into two. Okay. But the point that I want to make with today is that I think, again, I have no proof of this, but the impression I get from Rashi is that Rav Papa is midway between Rav Huna and the Brais. Toshma. Now, when we hear Toshma, we were hoping, you know, we're how shall I say, optimistic that we'll come to some conclusion about Nechlekat Yomis. Because I just want to make a comment here that when people go to an expert to check a lulav out, the first thing they check is the tiyomis. And it's all based on this gemara that we're going to learn. So the Amar Rav Masun, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, keep in mind Rav Yeshua ben Levi is a first generation Amora. He has a tremendous amount of authority in Shas. And here they're quoting Rav Yeshua ben Levi. But we'll soon see that there are two versions of exactly what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said. What was his ruling? According to the first version, he said, Nitla hatiyomes posel. Now, Nitla hatiyomes means that somebody performed a surgical operation and removed the tiyomes. You have now a lulav without a tiyomes. That's called Nitla Tiyomis. It was completely ripped off from the lulav. Again, if we catch the scoundrel who did such a thing, we'll flog him publicly. But whatever it is, that's what you have. Now, if Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said that this case is possible, why is it possible? Is it possible because there is no Tiyomis, the absence of the Tiyomis? Or is it possible because you don't have a kosher tiyomis? The tiyomis is not in its natural form. In fact, it doesn't exist in this lulav. It's completely absent. So the Gemara at this point thinks that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi disqualifies nitla hatiyomis, not because there is no tiyomis, but because even if there would be a tiyomis, it's not a kosher tiyomis, meaning I don't have the positive condition here of a kosher tiyomis. And that's what the Gemara says. Now, my love always introduces a rhetorical question. My love, shouldn't we assume who adin nechleka? Meaning, what difference to make if you surgically remove the tiyomis, or you have a tiyomis, but the tiyomis is not a tiyomis? Why isn't it a tiyomis? Because a tiyomis is made up of what? How many leaves? Two leaves that are attached. And here he detached, he split the two leaves. That's not a tiyomis. Otherwise, I wouldn't call it a tiyomis. So in its natural state, every lulav has a tiyomis. And you could undermine the tiyomis and disqualify the lulav in one of two ways. Either you do something really radical, and we have to catch the guy who did this, and he surgically removed the tiyomis, or alternatively, he did something a lot less profound, and he split the tiyomis. But that also, says the Gemara, means it's ois tiyomis. It's no longer a tiyomis. So Gemara says, lo, that's not how we're going to read Rav Yeshua ben Levi. But rather, nitla shaini, the case where he removed the tiyomis and he did something much more radical, that's possible. In other words, what Rav Yeshua ben Levi says the following: it's true that a tiyomis is critical to a lulav, but it's only critical, and it doesn't have a special status other than the fact that the lulav, in order to be natural, has to have a tiyomis. Every lulav has to have a tiyomis. That's what identifies the lulav. We're going to soon see later on that if you change the color of a lulav, if you have a freaky lulav that's not green, so it's not a lulav. You know, there's certain qualities that define the lulav. A lulav has to have olim. It has to have, what do we call it? well, what's olive in English again? Leaves. Leaves. Again, it's hard to call it a leaf in the classical sense, but we'll call it olive, leaves. And now, Rav Yishuv and Levi is telling me that a lulav, in order to be a natural lulav, has to have a tiyomis. But there are no special dinim that apply to that tiyomis. As long as you have a tiyomis. And now the Gemara adds three words. Da chaserle. Chaserle means that you've taken, in this surgical case, you've removed something from the gufa lulav. Again, you would have said that the gufa lulav is, you know, the spine of the lulav. Maybe you took off most of the olive of the lulav. Here you only removed one single olive, and that's enough to make it into a chaser. Now, the concept of chaser is not specifically related to the lulav. It applies to all four minim. Like, let's say, for example, part of the skin of the esrog was removed. That's also called a chaser, and that's possible, at least on the first day of Yom Tov. So that's called chaser. And chaser applies to the lulav. Now, when I say chaser applies to the lulav, then theoretically it could apply to any part of the lulav. We've divided the lulav into many different parts. But Rav Yishuv ben Levi says that in other parts of the lulav, maybe you have to really take a chunk out of the lulav, you know, cut out a whole major piece of the lulav, maybe rove of that part of the lulav, in order to make it into chaser. In the case of the tiyomes, the removal of the tiyomes, the absence of the tiyomes itself makes the lulav into chaser. That's the chiddush of Rav Yishuv ben Levi. Once you have a tiyomes, then the regular laws that apply to any other part of the lulav, all the other olim, apply to a tiyomes. So the fact that you split a tiyomes, that doesn't passel the lulav, because, again, as we said before, Rav Huna says that nistak, a split lulav, is kosher. The only radical case where a split lulav is possible is when it has shtei shidros, that from the shidra you see the shidra itself splits into two. And therefore, according to this version, this understanding of Rav Yishuv ben Levi, the answer to Rav Papa's question is that nechlokat tiyomis is kosher. Because again, as long as you have the tiyomis, it doesn't have to exactly be that Siamese twins. You can separate the two twins, and the lulav remains kosher. Because then it's like a case of nistak in Rav Papa's frame of reference. There are no station draws. And again, even though I have to grant you that this nistak is pretty radical, it's much more radical than Rav Huna's nistak, because as we saw in Rashi said, v'nistaka shidra, this split is not just on the tippy top of the lulav, it goes all the way down to the spine of the lulav, but nevertheless, it is a shidra. It still has what we call, it is a tiyomes. It still has the status of a tiyomes, as opposed to the case where he surgically removes the tiyomes, and then it becomes a chos. That's version number one. Ika diamri, now we have a second version. Om Rabbi Masun, Om Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, a different tradition of exactly what was the ruling. Om Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, nechloka tiyomes, nasa kemisha nitla tiyomes upasu. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi explicitly addressed the case of Rav Papa, namely nechloka tiyomes, and he equated nechloka tiyomes with the case of nitla tiyomes. Which means that if the tiyomis is not in its perfect natural state because it's split into two, then it's for virtually the same as removing the tiyomis, and you don't have a tiyomis. So it means, according to the second version, Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, we can understand why people, when they check out a lulav, the first thing they look at is the tiyomis, because they want to make sure that the tiyomis is not split. But again, you have to be very careful when you're checking out the tiyomis, and you want to make sure that it's not split. Don't start taking apart the leaves until you finally isolate the tiyomis, because then it becomes nifridu olav, and then you might need kofus. That's going to be the next sugya that we have now, and you're getting into deep trouble. So what you're going to have to look at is, you know, look at the tiyomis and see, you'll see that the lulav on top, I should bring in the lulav to show you, has a thick, a kind of a thick line that leads all the way to the tippy top. That thick line is indicative of the fact that the tiyomis is sealed together. In other words, that's the part of the tiyomis that it connects the two. What?
Stuck together.
I can't hear you.
It's stuck together.
It's stuck together. It sticks the two parts of the tiyomis together. So you don't have to do a surgical operation and start putting in, you know, a knife and a toothpick to see if it's still attached. If you see it, it looks natural. You can assume it's not split. So halacha lemaisa, the Gemara really doesn't come to any conclusion whatsoever about Rav Papa. Rav Papa had a suffix. of Nechla Hatiyomis Mai, and the Gemara ends up with Rabbi Shuv ben Levi, but we don't know exactly what Rabbi Shuv ben Levi said. According to one text in Rabbi Shuv ben Levi, he said that Nitla Tiyomis is possible. When you remove the Tiyomis, it's possible. And that would mean that he didn't go as far as to say that Nechlikov, there's a split in the Tiyomis, that would be possible. But according to the second version of Rabbi Shuv ben Levi, he was addressing exactly this case of Nechlikov Tiyomis, and he established that it has the same din as Nitla Tiyomis, and it's possible.
Are there any rules where you have Ikat Amrei as to which one you follow? There are no rules in Gemara?
Well, the most basic rule is Sofek Doraisa L'chumra Sofek Darabana L'kula. So, for example, on the first day of Yontif, which is a Doraisa, it's one of those few mitzvahs that we still have today after the loss of the Churban, that's Doraisa. We have Matzah, we have Dalet Minim, we have Sukkah. Like, there aren't that many, you know. You can count them on one hand. So you really want to be careful about the mitzvah dalet minim, mitzvah doraisa, on the first day. And I would tell you that if you see a radical split in the tiyomis, that's not the lulav that you want to buy. If you can't find any lulav other than this one on the face of the earth, that's called shas adchak. And in the case of shas adchak, we paskin that you make a bracha on a posel of lulav. Again, it's against the Rambam, because the Rambam is only willing to make a bracha on a lulav hayavish. But all other Rishonim assume that all psule lulav b'shas adchak you can make a bracha on. But let's assume that Baruch Hashem today we don't have a shas adchak. There's a very wide, you know, range of lulavim that you can get a hold of. So you don't want to avoid on the first day for sure a Nechlik HaTiyomis, because according to one Girsa, Rabbi Shuv ben Levi exactly addressed that case of Nechlik HaTiyomis and ruled that it's possible. If on the other hand you talk about the rest of the days of Sukkot, that's already a different story, because that's only what kind of mitzvah, Rabosai? The Rabbanon. That's Zecher LeMikdash, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's Takana, because in Mikdash we took the lulav of all 7 days, and when you're dealing with the Rabbanon, we can apply the principle of Sofek the Rabbanon Laku. You want to be Mahadar as HaMitzvah, and you want to say, well, I don't want a second-rate lulav for the rest of my Yontif, so then avoid Nechlikat Yomis. But technically speaking, it's absolutely kosher on the rest of the day. Okay. Now we get back to Nifridu Olav. What did the Mishnah Paskin about Nifridu Olav if the Olim are separated from the Shidra but they're not detached? What's the status of such a lulav? Kosher. Yeah, kosher? Can I get that? Like a little bit more, you know, I know it's Sunday and we just had a very exhausting Shabbos, and maybe some of you were traveling and you came back last night or this morning. But can we again, I'm going to say Nifridu Olav, and then everybody has to give me in one choir the answer to what's the status of Nifridu Olav. Everybody?
Kosher.
Okay, good. So comes along Rabbi Yehuda and he says, wait a minute, that's not so simple. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says that I have a brisa, and this brisa is going to clarify under what conditions is Nifridu Olav kosher. Now Rabbi Yehuda himself is a heavy hitter, but he takes us back even one generation earlier to Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon was the Gadol Ador. The entire Mesoras HaTorah that we have today is through Rabbi Tarfon. And Tanya, we have a brisa of Yudomer Mishum Rabbi Tarfon. He's quoting the pasuk Lekachtem Lachem Bayom HaRishon, and it says Kapos Tmarim. And instead of reading it Kapos, okay, which is called the Kri, we're going to read it Kofus, as if there was a Komatz under the Chaf. And if there's a Komatz under the Chaf, then it needs to be bound together. So when you look at a lulav, what you're going to see is that the Olim are totally clinging to the spine of the lulav, and therefore says Rabbi Tarfon, imhoya parud, if you have now a situation where your lulav is separated, meaning that the olim of the lulav have separated from the shidra, again they're still attached, yichavtenu is the verb of the word kafus. So kafus describes a lulav as bound, meaning that the olim are absolutely dvukim, they're connected to the shidra. Now he has a situation where the olim have separated from the shidra, so Rabbi Tarfon requires yichavtenu. Yichavtenu means he's got to tie them together and he's got to bind them. So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, "Beinon kofus sheim hayaparud yichaftenu." You have to tie them together. Okay, so it's not enough. Well, both say it's not enough to say that. You know, that it's still the olive, the leaves of the lulav are still attached, they're hanging on for dear life to the shidra. I have to change the tzura and replace it to as it would have looked if it was natural. Here, by the way, we're going to have to get into another sugya, I think we touched on it in the past. What agent can you use to bind the three minim? Let's assume, for argument's sake, that you need mimin halulav. You're going to have to take a part of the lulav and use it as a binding agent. Otherwise, you have other issues called baltosif, perhaps, by adding another min. And in any event, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not enough to say, well, I could have done kvisa, you know, I could have bound it together, but I was lazy that day. And a lulav is kosher. No. A lulav has to be kofos. That's what Rabbi Yehuda means. Now, the Tanakhama disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanakhama says that nifridu olav kasha without any ifs, ands, or buts. There are no conditions added. It's called a stama. Stama means unqualified. If the leaves of the lulav are separated from the shidra, the lulav is kasha as is. So what about this drasha of kafus? We're going to see that this drasha comes up over and over again throughout the Gemara. So the Rishonim say that even the Chachamim agree that you need kafus, but you only need potential kafus. You don't need actual kafus. As long as the lulav lends itself to kafus, meaning right now the olam are loosely hanging in there, not attached in a davuk situation to the shidra, that's enough, because potentially you could have done the act of kfisa. So the machlokas now becomes the following: Rabbi Yehuda, on the one hand, in the name of Rabbi Tarfa, requires kfisa befal, the actual binding together. It's not enough that you could have bound, you have to do it. Whereas the Chacham and the Tanakama, their position is that as long as it's royal kfisa, it lends itself to kfisa, then it's kosher. You don't have to actually bind it together.
So you see some people put lots of bindings on the shidra? Is that where it comes from?
They're probably... Well, there are one or two answers to your question. You know, those rings that you have? Yeah. So I'm not a Kabbalist, but according to Kabbalah, there should be three rings, the number three. On a halachic level, you know, there was a whole talk here at Charles Schutz yesterday about, you know, what's halachic and what's not halachic. And in this case, on a halachic level, I say the purpose of the rings is to make it into kofos, meaning make sure that, you know, you guarantee yourself that the leaves of the lulav do not separate from the lulav. But again, that would only reflect the shita of Yehuda, who requires kofos befal. In actuality, you have to tie it together. We hold like the Rabbanim, that all you need is royal kfisa. And I don't know if there's anyone here in the room who's learning menachos now. So in Menachos, you're learning Menachos. So there's a very, very famous principle in the Gemara Menachos, which is a Shas principle and applies right here on our daf, which is called Roy Leblila. In other words, when a mincha is made up in a kli sharis, whether it's a machvas, whatever the kli sharis might be, you pour in two elements. You pour in a liquid and a solid. Right, the solid is a solus. And the ratio between the two has to allow you to do what's called blila. Blila means you mix them together until they become a kind of a dough, an isa. And the Gemara says the following, that the mitzvah blila is only lechatchila. It's the ideal situation of a mincha. But blila is not likuv, it's not critical. But what you do need is royal blila. It has to be a ratio, a proportion, that lends itself to blila. And if you don't have enough liquid, and you have too much solid, and you won't be able to do the blila, is kol she'eino royal blila. If it's not royal blila, is blila makevispo. Then blila becomes likuva. So if you apply that principle here, what the Rabbanan is saying is that I don't need kafus, I need royal kafus. As long as the pieces of the lulav are still hanging in there, and all I had to do to attach them and connect it to the shidra would be kafus, kfisa, then now the lulav is defined in its status as royal kafus, and if it's royal kafus, then it's kosher.
So basically you have the potential.
Correct. According to Chachamim, we emphasize the potential. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's the actual. I'm using Aristotelian terms here, but yeah.
So you have shoelaces and your shoes, you have
the ability to tie them, you didn't tie them. So it's the same thing here. You took the lulav, you didn't tie it.
Mm.
It's all right, because they were kosher enough to tie it.
Yeah, but Brian, I just want, you got to be very careful. You can't go too far with this. For example, if the Kohen is wearing shoes when he does the avodah is posel. So you can't tell me where he untied his laces. And it says it's royal yoschaf yachef, you know. But what I mean to say is that, let's say, for example, in chalitza, okay? So chalitza, you may know, it comprises two different parts. One part is the actual removal of the shoe, and the other part is the statement, the declaration. There's a whole parasha that has to be read. So the Gemara establishes that ein kriya makeves bo, that if they did the chalitza and the yavama did not make the declaration, whatever it says in the pasuk, and I think we read it recently, right? So even though she omitted the kriya, the declaration, then she can marry someone else, which is a very important halacha, you know, because in some places, you know, we have to rely on that halacha. So the Gemara right away asks Akasha. It says that an ilim, who's a person that doesn't have the capacity to speak, is posel chalitza. He's completely disqualified for chalitza. The Gemara asks, wait a minute, just because he can't speak, he can do the chalitza and ein kriya makeves bo. Exactly. So the Gemara answers, you need royal kriya, and an elam is excluded. And this is Rabbi Tam's famous sheet, the world famous sheet, that you could write testimony on a piece of paper and mail it into Beis Din. I mean, all the Rishonim disagree, but Rabbi Tam is always the revolutionary. So the Gemara, so all the Rishonim attack Rabbi Tam. The Gemara says that an elam who can't speak is posel eidus. Why is he posel eidus? Let's just write his eidus down. According to Rabbi Tam, you can send your eidus in writing. So Rabbi Tam answers, because if he's an elam, he's not royal lehagodas per. He doesn't have the ability. So very often in halacha, this is all based on a sugi menachos, we look at the ability and not at the actuality. And that's the way the Rabbanan hold about this drasha of kofos. Okay, Rabbosa, we all know what a lulav is, am I right? But the Gemara doesn't seem to know what a lulav is. Take a look at the next Gemara. Amalei Ravina l'Ravashi. Mimai, who tells you, Dahai, that quote, in the pasuk it says, Kapos Tmarim, unquote, Delulavahu, is a lulav. I have another interpretation that I want to suggest, says Ravina, and the words kapos tomorrow are not referring to a lulav. Ema, perhaps, licharusa. Now this word charusa should be a little bit familiar to us, because when we learned the brisa here on the top of Lamed Beis, which lists all the psule lulav, one of them was called a charus. Well, charus is the shortened Hebrew form of the Aramaic charusa. And if you remember, we discussed charusa, or charus, that Rashi says that after years on the lulav tree, what happens is that the parts of the lulav begin to get very dry. And they get so dry that if they, you know, if you would try to remove them, that they would absolutely crack out of dryness. You know, this is Michael, where we had the discussion about the cold weather and so forth and so on. And at this point, Ravina turns to Ravashi, and he wants to know what the phrase kapos tmarim refers to. Maybe it refers to charusa. These are the leaves, you know, when the branches of the palm tree get very, very hard with the passage of time, and at that point, you know, the leaves themselves are kind of separated from the shidra. I think I have a picture of it somewhere. Did I show you this picture already? Yeah, but I want to show you the public picture. So let's see if I can find it. Okay. Oh yeah, it looks a little bit like this. Except what you don't see here in this picture is how dry it is. It becomes so dry with the passage of time that if you would pull it off, it would absolutely crack. It would crack off. That's how dry it is. There's no pliable. It's not pliable at all. And the Gemara wants to know is it possible that Kapos Tmora might actually refer to this Charusa situation? Okay. So now, Rav Ashi, who was the to whom the question was addressed, he responds and he says, "Beina." What does Beina mean? We require. Kofus. Kofus, again, if you go like the Rabbanon, means what? Do you actually have to tie it together? Bound it? No, you have to have the potential. Vileka, we don't have the potential of Kofus. See, this is where the Rishonim maintain that even the Chachamim have the same drasha of Kofus. It's not just Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda took it one step further and he says you actually have to bind it to the Shidra. According to Chachamim, you need the potential for binding it to the Shidra. And this Charusa, says Rav Ashi, doesn't have the potential to bind it. It's just so dried up. You know, after this branch of the Lulav lasts for so many years, Rashi says 2 or 3 years, after that time period, it becomes, you know, the Lulav tree becomes so, the leaves of the Lulav become so brittle and rigid that if you attempt at a kofus situation, the whole thing is going to fall apart. So now the Gemara goes back to the drawing board. The Amon, perhaps, maybe what the Torah means when it says kapos tmorim is li'ufta. Okay, so now we're going to look at Rashi and try to figure out what li'ufta means. First of all, let's go over the Rashi about charusa. Rashi on charusa says that a charusa is an anaf, a branch of the dekel of the date palm, mishen iskasha. After 2-3 years on the tree, the branches become so tough that yotzin bo lulavim harbe, the lulavim that come out of this branch of the lulav, nasu eitz, it becomes absolutely brittle like a tree, like a piece of wood. And zeponu lekan v'zeponu lekan ke'anfei shar ha'ilonos. Rashi says this doesn't have that unique tsura of a lulav where the anofim are hugging the shidra, as we said before, but rather they go this way and they go that way. Being on kofus, okay, that we saw already. V'ema ufta, this is where we're up to now. Ufta, Rashi says, me'ikar ha'dekel hu. Right, I have a picture of you for that, a colored picture. And this is a pretty easy one. Here. Now, okay. So now take a look at this date palm tree, this dekel. Right? Do you see these pieces here? Right? You can see them here as well. Do you want to pass that around or you can see it? Okay, so that's called ufta. Now, I tricked you a little bit because this tree is actually not a kosher tree. This is called a canary tree. I mean, again, there's a big machlokas about the canary tree, but this is a canary tree. Now, this ufta is a little bit different than this ufta. You see this ufta here is quite tall. Do you see that? Yeah. That's indicative of a lulav tree.
What are those?
Charios, I think it's called. Yeah. So again, you see these pieces here? Now, in modern Hebrew, that's called geza ha'etz. I don't know how to translate that. It means the base of the tree. What? The trunk of the tree. Excellent. So this is the trunk of the tree, and that's called the charusa. This picture, which is much more beautiful, is actually not a lulav tree. It's a canary tree, it's called.
Well, this doesn't have...
It's missing about 5 different elements of a lulav tree. One of them is that its trunk looks radically different. It's a very long trunk. This is a very short stump. But the pieces on the stump themselves in a lulav tree are much longer, are much taller. So Rashi says, V'ema ufta me'ikar ha'dekel hu, it belongs to the base or the trunk of the date tree. V'ena naf yotzi mimenu lekan ulekan, there are no branches coming out of it. She'emcha kofus heimenu, why does Gemara think that would be an excellent candidate for a kapos tmorim? Because if kapos tmorim means kofus, You can't get better than that. I mean, this is totally gophers. You don't have to tie together any leaves because there are no leaves. So the Gemara says, no, you made a big mistake here. Kofus, the Torah says that you need the possibility of making it into kofus. If it's the ufta, then the ufta doesn't have the possibility of kofus because there's no leaves coming out of the ufta. It's purely a trunk of a tree. Michlal, since the Torah says kofus, you derive from that the ikar parud, that sometimes the leaves are separated from the spine and sometimes they're hugging the spine. V'hai kofus v'yomid li'olam. This is not a case where you can differentiate between kofus and not kofus, because there are no leaves coming out of the trunk of the tree, and therefore it doesn't lend itself to being kofus. Ravina is still not happy. V'ema, perhaps. What does kapos tvar mean? Kufra, l'kufra. Maybe we're talking about a kufra. Well, everybody knows what a kufra is. I'm just joking. We don't know what a kufra is until we see Rashi. Rashi, before at the end of the skinny lines, Rashi says, V'ema kufra. Hainu, what's a kufra? Eitz, ke'en charusa. It's very similar to the charusa, right, which we said is the branches of the lulav tree after 2 years and 3 years, when they get really dry, and so that the leaves that come out of the charusa are pona lekan ulekan, you know, they hang this way and they hang that way. El adayin ben shano shnatayim, it's in the first year or two. Velonis ave etzo, and therefore the tree is not so thick, and therefore atayochol lachuf anofav, it has the potential for kfisa. You mean now it's not so dry that if you would tie it and attach it to the shidra, it would absolutely crack. That's not how dry it is. You can do an igud, v'zokfan lamala. Right, this is what I have in my backyard. This is exactly the kufra. I should take a picture of it. And the kufra tree, which has, you know, it has these branches that are hanging this way and hanging that way, but they're still soft and pliable, because it's only after a year or two. 2 years down the line, Rashi says, you can't do kufus. So what is the issue with kufra? Why does Ravina assume that kufra is not valid and doesn't qualify as a kosher lulav? And he asks the question, well, why can't it qualify? Why don't we interpret kapos tomorrow as referring to kufra? So Rashi explains that the problem with kufra is something called kotzim. Do you remember we discussed this? Kotzim are thorns. It seems that the kufra has thorns coming out of it on each side. Rashi says on the third of the white line, Yotzin mihem uktzin harbe. There are many of these thorns. Umisartin es hayodayim. What does srito mean?
Scratch.
It scratches the hands. So if you need to get some blood out of your body, then take a kufra. That's a good idea. But if you want your body to remain whole, then you don't want to take a kufra. Amar Abaye, that's what Abaye says. Rochel darchi noam v'chol nesivoseh shalom.
What happens when you take your lulav on Pesach to use to light the sefer chametz?
You cut yourself?
You can cut yourself. It's so short.
Oh, so you better wear gloves. I mean, there's no mitzvah to burn your chametz and scratch your hands at the same time. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk here, Rochel darchi noam. Correct. Okay. Now that's the end of this paragraph. Can somebody just tell me what time it is? I don't know where I put my watch. I'm constantly looking for it. 24? 25? Okay, if anybody sees my watch, I don't know where I put it.
It's with the black pen.
I don't know. I'm not finding it. Okay, I'm sure it's here on the table. I just don't know where I put it. Okay. So Amalei Rava, okay, this is already a whole new paragraph. Again, we're still trying to figure out what Kapos Tvara means. So Rava from the city of Tosfa turns to Ravina and he says, V'ema, perhaps, tarte kape de tamre. Now the lulav tree is made up, as we said, of many parts. You know, there's the trunk of the tree, and then the branches of the tree, and then the olim of the tree, the shidra. There's so many different parts. But one of them is a branch that has dates on it. I mean, that's why this tree is so popular. It's a date tree. And the Torah says, kapos tamarin. If we take the word kapos as a plural, it's referring to these branches that have on them two tamarin. So you take a branch that has at least a minimum of two dates on it, and that branch should be enough to fulfill the requirement of kapos tamarin. So Ravina answers, kapas ksiv. Kapas ksiv. Now if you take a look at Tosfos on the bottom of the page, he says the following, that kapas ksiv is called yesh em lemesores, which means the following, that we have a mesores as to how to read a word and how it's written in the Torah. And mikra means how you read the word, so we read it as kapos, but mesores means the mesorah on how it's written in the Torah, and it's written without a vav, as kapas. So you know, Rava, when he asked the question, he was building himself on the mikra, on the kri, yeshem la mikra, which means we read it as what? As kapos, and therefore kapos two of tamarim would mean a branch that has two tamarim on it. And the Gemara answers, Ravina responds, and he says, well, wait a minute, yesh em la mesoris, which means that we have a mesoris as to how to read the word, and we read the word as if it said kapas, which is in the singular, and we take out the vav when we read it, and therefore we read it as kapas tamarim. And if it's kapas tamarim, then it's not referring to a branch that has tamarim on it, because presumably the branch would have two tamarim, and kapas means that it has only one date on it. So the Gemara asks, v'yei machado, why don't we take a branch that has one date on it? And that would fulfill the yesh em lemesores requirement of kapas ksiv. So the Gemara answers, lahu kaf korile. If it was one branch with one date on it, then it would have been called a kaf, not kapos. So again, what we want to establish here is that we have to read these two words together in conjunction. Kapas tomorrow, or kapos tomorrow. Now Tosus here on the bottom of the page says, v'tzarech taimo, he says, I don't understand how this whole sugi can be based on the principle called yesh em lemesoris. In fact, all over Shas, we have machlokas with the yesh em lemesoris or yesh em lemikra. You know, what determines, you know, the interpretation of the word? Does it the way we read it or the way it's written? So how can you possibly say that yesh em lemesoris? And then he ends with v'tzarech taimo. So on this v'tzarech taimo, there are many, many different tosas in all over the place to try to figure out in what set of circumstances does everybody agree that yesh em lemesoris. And now we'll end with Sine Har HaBarzel. The Mishnah says that this particular lulav that grows on a palm tree, which is on Har HaBarzel, is Kshera. Amar Abaye, you can't take the Mishnah simply as is and assume unqualified that every case of a lulav at Har HaBarzel is kosher. Lo shanu el shirosho shel zeh magia litzad ikro shel zeh. We only are able to be machshir the lulav from Har HaBarzel if the top of one layer of olim reaches and touches the bottom of the next layer. The problem with Sinai Har HaBarzel is that very often you'll have it look like this. There'll be two olim over here that meet up with the shidra, and then there'll be a little bit of a space, and then you have the next set of two olim. And that space which separates one level of olim from the other, that's called ein rosho shel zeh magia l'tzad ikro shel zeh, and that's possible. Tanya Nami Yochi, we have a brisa to support this position of Abaye, and it says the following: Tzine Har HaBarzel psula. Here we say that it's not kosher, and yet hot anantana, we have our Mishnah that says Kshera el Shma Minokin Abaye. The only way of reconciling it is that it depends whether the top of the leaf reaches the bottom of the previous leaf. And the Gemara goes on to say, and with this we'll continue, Ika de Rami Derami Le Mirma. We had another version in which even before Abaye came onto the picture, we had a contradiction. The Tanan on the one hand, the Mishnah says, Sinei Arabarzel Kosher. And now we have a stira, we have a contradiction, because Hassan, we have a brisa that says Psula. Omer Abaye came to reconcile this contradiction. And he said the following, Lo Kasher, there's no question, because Kan Rosho Shel Zeh Magia Letzad Ikro Shel Zeh, but Kan Ein Rosho Shel Zeh Magia Letzad Ikro Shel Zeh. So it all depends upon whether or not there's a connection between each layer of leaves. So you can't just have a separation between one layer and the next one. Now, if I wanted to look for this Tzine Hara Barzel, where would I find it? Omer Av Miryon, Omer Av Yeshub Ben Levi, V'yamri Le Toni Rava, Rava Bar Mori, Mishum Rav Yochim and Zakai. You want to find the Tzine Hara Barzel, you want to take your class out for a trip, right? What do they call it? A field trip. So let's see this Tzine Hara Barzel. I want to see what it looks like. He says, Shtei Tmaros, Yesh Begei Ben Hinnom. This is on the outskirts of Yerushalayim. It's called Gei Ben Hinnom. If you put that word together, you end up with Gehinnom, right? Which is the place you don't want to go, because you shovel hot coals over there for I don't know for how long. I'm just joking with you. But anyway, so he says, Shtei Tmaros, there are two day trees, Yesh Begei Ben Hinnom. So you just leave Yerushalayim. We'll have to ask Yehuda to take us on a trip there. V'ola Oshan mi beinein. And between these two day trees, you're going to see steam. What's a better word for steam? You're going to see smoke. Excellent, smoke. You're going to see smoke going up between these two trees. It doesn't seem like there were many of them. The Gemara seems like that's why there are only two of them. V'zeo sheshaninu, and that's what the Mishnah refers to, Tzine Harabarzel Ksheros. Now, why is there steam and smoke coming up between these two? You know, the Gemara tells us that when Korach was swallowed up by the earth, you know, there was a steam that came up from the place where he says, Zui Pischa Shel Gehenna. This is the opening into Gei Ben Hinnom, and that's where it's hot coals over there, so you're going to see a lot of smoke coming out of there. So if you don't mind trying to get, you know, you might have to jump over the smoke. I don't know, it's very dangerous. You don't want to fall in between these two trees, but if you can figure out from the outside, maybe you can do a circuitous route around the two trees and then take the lulavim, it might be kosher. And that would depend upon whether it's Ikro Shel Zeh, Magia Le'ol Shel Zeh. Okay, Rabbi, so let's make a note, if you don't mind, as to where we got to here. So tomorrow we're going to have to try to calculate exactly the size of a tefach in order to figure out the size of a lulav. Yeah, you think it's steam going around there? Yehuda, is there any steam in Marat HaMachpelah coming out of a palm tree? I can't hear you.